goodness.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Andrea. Good morning. Oh, that was so beautiful. You guys wrote that. You guys did that. Do you see what happens when you can collaborate with a liked mind and where we can get in a zone together? And oh my gosh, that's so beautiful. I'm so happy. Andrea is one of the musicians that always sends me, what about this? What about that? I get to have a little say in what happens here on Sunday morning. And I said, oh yeah, I really love that one. And are you going to, do you have a CD in the works then so we can all have that? Okay. All right. Nice. Nice. Well, it is so beautiful and it's wonderful to have you here again. Thank you so much. So good morning. I welcome you yet again to the West Valley Center for Spiritual Living. And I'm Reverend Karen Rice. I'm the spiritual leader of this community and I'm very happy to have you here. I have something to say today that ties in with the title of my message, Falling Into Judgment. And really excellent song choices. This is going to blow your mind, in fact. and the little Jesus story, darling, you're going to laugh too, because I got something in the message for you too today, sort of incidentally. So we are embarking on, in the month of September, we're focusing on this month of service. It is also the month where we celebrate World Peace Day. Don't forget that Paul Dano has us all keyed up. How many of you have set your clocks, your phones already for 5 a.m. and you're going to do the World Peace Meditation with us? Nice and high so we can count. He's tracking. So I'm telling you, Paul, I'm seeing maybe a dozen hands. So you can add that to your number list. And if you're not sure what we're talking about, they're on World Peace Day, Wednesday the 21st. Is that right? Is it Wednesday? I didn't double check. Paul Dano has coordinated this global ring your phone and some great peace bells in other parts of the world will be ringing at exactly the same time. So if you want to take a half a minute to affirm peace on this planet and imagine a world that works for everyone, this is a beautiful way to participate. So thank you for creating that opportunity. We are honored to know you. You do all kinds of crazy cool things. Paul is the creates our peace poles and donated one for the sanctuary and one for our Parker's Garden out in the corner. So this morning, the ministers that are participating in this same theme all over the world, the CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living Ministers, are playing with this one quote that comes from our Science of Mind textbook and fits in with the Global Heart Vision, a world that works for everyone. And the line from Ernest Holmes, the founder of our philosophy, Ernest said, "A new light is coming to the world." A new light is coming to the world. And so when I write my blog at the beginning of the week to let you know what the talk is going to be about this week, I always sit with my notes I made and how I chose my talk titles and where I think I'm going to go, what direction I'm going to go in. And I actually teased in the blog that I was meditating and I had this moment, and I think that's what Andrea keeps referring to, is I had this moment where I saw sort of a vision of the planet, only it was smallened somehow. It was like an enchanted forest, and there were lights, these golden glowy lights that were just like fireflies. So it was as if the sun had set and it wasn't real dark yet, but those fireflies were just lighting up in that gorgeous warm way that fireflies do that. And I saw it as a little bursts of light of individuals that every time we remember the truth of our being, every time we remember that we cannot be separated from God, that there is no place that God is not, and so God has to be right here with me right now in this very moment. Every time we have that memory or that knowing or that connection, that we glow, that there is a light about us. Now, many religions and spiritual traditions throughout the recorded history, and even in great artwork, as we've referenced earlier, you can see that there's some essence of that idea of light that fits with that spiritual connection. And so that excites me when I see those lights, as I'm looking at a smaller glimpse of the world and I see those lights, I see it as sort of like the divine heartbeat that pulses with our memory of the truth of our being. And so it's exquisite when you make it a little magical and you allow yourself to see that those are the moments where we get that God is love and that we are connected to God and that it doesn't matter what anybody else on the planet is doing in that moment, because in that moment we are in the zone. We are connected. And I do think it creates an essence. It's like an electrical impulse. That's what scientists describe our body as that's kind of electrical. And so what a beautiful vision that creates for us as we begin to think about that. So what does it mean to say a new light is coming to the world? I wanted to read you the entire passage, well, not the entire, but some of that passage that comes right out of the Science of Mind textbook. And I'm going to tell you, the first time I stumbled on this passage, I felt something leap inside of me. Something resonated as, oh my gosh, this is so exciting. These words are so important. And this is not the first time I have read this passage here in this sanctuary or in the classroom for that matter. Here are his words. A new light is coming to the world. We are on the borderland of a new experience. The invisible passes into visibility through our faith in it. A new science, a new religion, a new philosophy are rapidly being developed. This is in line with the evolution of the great presence, and nothing can hinder its progress. A new light. And I just emphasize week after week that as we look at this philosophy, the truths that are pulled together from all the religious and spiritual traditions of the world, as we align ourselves to some of those ideas, we are becoming that new light. Now, Ernest Holmes wrote these words likely between the two world wars. The world wasn't pretty. The Depression was in there somewhere. And yet, none of that seemed to hinder his ability to imagine a world that worked for everyone. To imagine that there is still goodness on this planet, no matter what is going on in different places around the world. We teach, the way that we teach prayer, and that was what we talked about last week, the way that we talk about prayer is that, I love this middle sentence here, the invisible passes into visibility through our faith in it. So we dare to move into affirmative prayer, and we dare to create an image in our mind of the answer to that prayer as if it is already done. And the same is true in the way that we can imagine a better future for this planet and for our own lives and for humanity and for all of life that lives on this planet. So I have been saying for quite a while, probably a year or more, and I continue to feel it building in me that there is something new trying to emerge on this planet, and we are being called to let our light shine. It's time for us to sparkle a little bit. So it's not to say we don't have issues. We don't have challenges. You know, some of us are moving right now through a health challenge. Some of us have financial challenges or relationship challenges. And yet, that does not have to dim our light. And in fact, if our challenges do dim our lights, then we need to be somewhere where we can be in the essence of other people's light so that we can feel that upliftment that comes from that. So I love the sentence here where he says, it passes through our faith in it, and that's why each and every person sitting in a chair in this room right now is here. so that we can make visible that which is invisible in some way in our knowing, in our embodying of some little gem of something spoken today that we can use personally. Because even the tiniest thing can help us to feel better and then therefore to contribute to making the world a better place from our own two shoes that we stand in. So there's all this potential for good, and yet I notice even in my own life that I fall into judgment every now and then, right? I'm just guessing, but I'm probably not alone. Probably others of us fall into those places where we have a little judgment. We have some opinions that might not be those jubilant opinions that I like to brag about. But we fall into judgment. We fall into that. I notice in my own life, I fall into that place of comparing my life to the way other people's live their lives. And then I always wonder if I measure up or if I'm out of line or if there's something I need to change or fix, right? That's judgment. You know, I'm on this planet to grow forever. I want to really, my full intention is to really, really grow until my last breath, you know, and then I can't wait to see what's next. But that doesn't mean that I need to focus my entire life on looking at my issues. What it means is I have this gorgeous opportunity to notice that there's this movement of life, and I'm just a part of it. And I can fight it and I can resist change, or I can find my rhythm in it and move in that higher vibration of that divine pattern that God has just for my life. So I know that I'm tempted to compare my life to others' lives. I'm tempted to, see if you relate to this one, to measure what I have in my life as compared to what I think I ought to have in my life or what I want, right? So we're looking again at material things and acquisitions, acquiring more and more. But here's the deal. Whenever we fall into judgment, we have moved out of love. And our light's not on anymore. So it's not bad. You know, don't hear this as a reprimand. It's just a part of that rhythm of life, the way we all move. We are impacted by the experiences we move through. But then we come here to remember that we get to choose our attitude. We get to choose how we're going to respond to life. Now, I thought a lot this week because I promised when I wrote the blog, I promised that I would take a look at how did we as humanity, how did we create a judgmental God? How did we make God so judgmental? Why do we have to have a judgmental God? And so I did a lot of meditating around that, and I did my due diligence. I did a lot of research around it. And so I'm going to share with you this morning what I came up with, what I think. Remember, it's just a story. Doesn't mean it's true. Not that I would ever lie intentionally, but I have my own idea around what I think from the work that I've done this week. I think that we have, if we look at the scriptures, especially the Hebrew scriptures, what some of us call the Old Testament, we can see there is a strong flavor of a hierarchy God that did a lot of smiting and punishing and things like that. Now, I'm an old Bible student. Most of you know that. I love the Bible, and I was a very dedicated student for a long time. And when I outgrew that and got ready to move on, I found that it was kind of a difficult place to be because I had to give up everything I used to believe in terms of how I was interpreting the Bible, which at one time in my life I believed was inerrant, that it was the whole truth. And I didn't understand the way I could use it personally. When we teach metaphysical Bible here, we give you a very personal approach to that. And Mark will be doing that in his class. And by the way, Mark, I don't know that it was said today, but published recently, his most recent book is on the metaphysical interpretation of the parables of Jesus. So there is another way to do it, but I threw that, like many people do, I threw the baby out with the bathwater. I couldn't figure out how to read the Bible anymore and not see all that judgment that I suddenly began to see in so many of the scriptures. And so I was thinking, and John and Dorothy, I've been thinking about you all week, because one of my professors in seminary that taught a class called Understanding the Bible is Dr. Culver Nelson, and that's right. John and Dorothy have a personal relationship with Dr. Culver. They get to call him Bill, because I don't think most people that live there realize he's kind of famous. He's kind of really an amazing human being. But he was the professor of the Bible, Understanding the Bible, I think was the title of the class. And John and Dorothy arranged for me to meet him, but it was a surprise. They didn't tell me who he was, who I was going to be having dinner with. And we had such a good time that night. But one of the things that Dr. Culver, or Dr. Nelson, required when you take the class was that you read the entire Bible. Now, I had read the Bible before, and a lot, and I figured he gave that assignment to people because it was for people who had never read the Bible, that everybody should be able to say they read the Bible. And I kind of resented having to read the whole Bible, and it was a 10-week class, so we only had 10 weeks to read the whole Bible, and he gave us a ton of homework. Oh my goodness, he is a true professor. And he really wanted us to have that done. And I'm a good student, so I would get up at 4 in the morning. I actually got to tell Dr. Culver this story. I would get up at 4 in the morning and read the Bible for 2 hours against my will. So it was not fun. I did not have a good time doing it. And I got to about the middle of the Bible. So the first part of the Bible is a lot of the history. And then you get to the pretty part, the Psalms and the Song of Solomon and Ecclesiastes. And there's poetry. But then after that, you find the prophets. So the prophets are like Jeremiah and Isaiah and Daniel and Ezekiel. And then there's all the minor prophets. There's all these little bitty books that a lot of people don't even know about, let alone know how to pronounce their names. And but we are reading, and I'm reading every day and every day. But I got to the prophets, and I got real unhappy. It's like, wow, this is such an angry God. He's always, you know, just smiting and punishing and killing and striking down and all this stuff. And so when I recognized that I had that attitude, I began to look again at what do those writings mean. So what I want to tell you, and I refreshed my research this week, is that the prophets when Isaiah and Jeremiah were writing, things were not good for the Hebrew people. Things were difficult for the Hebrew people. And the prophets had this idea that they were called by God to convince everybody that God was good and that God intended good in their lives, but they needed to clean up their act. They needed to quit the bad habits, and they needed to cease their practicing those evil ways, whatever the evil ways might be. And they needed to be vigilant in the way that they showed up to worship God, to be of service to God. But the thing is, and this is where I think we get the real strong sort of that tag that hangs on to the idea of a judgmental God, that they also taught, the prophets taught, not just that God was good, but they taught that everything that happened in your life came from God. Everything that went wrong in your life was some kind of a judgment from on high. So it didn't matter if it was a political disaster or a religious catastrophe. It didn't matter if it was the war or earthquakes or some kind of crazy accident. All of it was seen as punishment from the divine. So in the view of the prophets, God himself was working to set the world right, working to provide salvation for the people, but the people had to respond favorably. So these prophets would go to these villages and talk to the people who were very downtrodden. It was difficult times. They were, again, in the wreckage of exile. They had lost everything. The farmer no longer had his land, and the sheep herder no longer had his herds. And they were without any income. They lost all their livelihood, their homes. They were humiliated and really beaten down, and they'd faced sickness, and they had a lot of death. They experienced a lot of death. And so the prophets came with this message that everything's going to be okay, but wake up, people. You got to figure out that God is not here in the temple and missing in the secular realm. So the point of the punishing God was to help people see that God is everywhere, but they did it in sort of this, I'm going to use the word twisted. I don't really mean it as an opinion, but it seems like a backwards, I think that's a better word, a backwards way, but you can see that it was very fear-based, which was not uncommon. Religion often was used to rule the people, so there had to be, at that time, it was effective to have these fear-based attitudes. But when I look at that, when I look at the way it seems sort of backwards to scare people into pleasing God so God doesn't punish you or judge you, I can see then that helps me make sense of some of the stuff that continues to go on in the world. That there are sort of cultural attitudes that are developed from different religious beliefs that impact our behavior and the choices that we make and the way we go about, even the way we go about our spirituality. So what I want to say is, and I say this all the time, but I love that we are not a fear-based faith. I love that we don't try and scare the hell out of you, I like to say. Because I think the problem is in that way that the God of the Hebrew people, that God Jehovah, the stringent Father God that wasn't always a kind God, the way that image was really embedded in the consciousness of humanity over generations is part of the problem. It is why, even if we don't believe that, once in a while, we even the best religious scientist will have a moment where you're moving through a challenge in life and you find yourself saying, why did God allow that to happen? See, that's a remnant of blaming God. That's a remnant of that old belief that all the bad things that happened came from God. So, you know, because they didn't have a big threat of the devil until the New Testament, then everything changed a little bit, or a lot. But we also softened and brought more love and compassion, we see, in the New Testament. So it was not uncommon in difficult times for people to seek the support of like-minded people or people who went through the similar experiences they did. We relate to all of that. Some of us are here for that very reason. And I also want to say that it's helpful to keep in mind that the prophets believed that they received all the information from God. And so the divine guidance that went to the people came through the prophets. So, you know, there's just something here that has a flavor of, well, yeah, that's kind of hard to kick out of our consciousness, especially since so many religions have a similar belief in a deity that punishes. So, though they intended to bring hope to the people, there was still a lot of fear in it. A lot of rules and a lot of ways we were required. I mean, they said things like, you know, this is interesting because it reminds me so much of what we say. God has something to say about everything, your feelings, your thoughts, your money, your politics. God's in all of it. So how beautiful that we are able to look at that, but we don't blame God. We see that we are all here as individualized expressions of life itself, and that we make independent choices, and that our choices always have consequences. So we live in this realm of cause and effect, and we are thereby experiencing all the time the effect of a decision that was made before the invisible became visible. A couple things that happen in that mode of judging. One is that I think it would be helpful for us to notice how often we're judging ourselves, how often we're questioning ourselves, because as hard as you are on you is probably as hard as you are on everybody else. So if you don't notice how you're always looking at, measuring and comparing yourself, you can likely notice how much you have a strong opinion about something that somebody else does that you're not happy with. So that's what we call projection, and that you can always pull that back and use that like, wow, so what's going on inside of me that I keep seeing this out here? You know, it's like I'll have a day where I'll wake up grumpy and I'll go out in public and I'll bump into somebody that's just rude to me, and I'll think, wow, why did that happen? And then a little bit later in the day, I bump into somebody else that's even worse. You know, it's like, man, what is wrong? Why am I finding all the grumpy people today? And then the third time, it's like, what is wrong with everybody else? Oh, it's not everybody else. It's something that I bring if I'm in that space. And so I want to clean that stuff up. And that's what we're all about, is how do we be accountable for ourselves and clean that stuff up so that we're not judging others. And then the last little piece I wanted to say about that is this idea of the judgmental God is also enhanced or grows because of this thing that Ernest Holmes used to say, there's this consciousness of the human race. Carl Jung called it the collective unconscious. And so we are always bumping into sort of the common consensus of what the general public is thinking. And so sometimes when we get in that place, if you do not believe in an angry, judging God, and you have a moment where you go, why, God? Then stop and think. Get clear. Just get clear again so that we can live where we're seeing and perceiving life at a higher level. We call that rising above the law of averages, so that we're at choice as to how we're experiencing our life and our day. All the fear-based stuff, I think, is where the dogma fits in. And we really make an effort to be dogma-free, but I'm not so sure that we... I know I got some dogma. I got some things I believe that are uniquely mine. And everybody is encouraged to find their own place and their own ideas. The biggest hit here is, like right back to class one in the foundation, is what do you believe about God? And let's make sure we aren't keeping our God too small. I think as we proceed on any kind of a spiritual path, the one thing I would love for people to do most is to recognize that gorgeous connection, the way we are so woven into each other. And it reminds me very much of like the way the trees give oxygen, and then we humans need that oxygen, and we on our exhale are providing carbon dioxide for the trees. And so every inhale and every exhale allows us to see how we are dependent upon each other in these interesting ways that we can't even see with our naked eye. It's a gorgeous process of life, I think. So I'm always doing my part to help make the world a better place. I try and be conscious as much as I can. I try and not to be too hard on myself, and sometimes I'm hard on myself by trying not to be too hard on myself, and it's interesting. So I'm always trying to bring a little more sparkle, a little more love, a little more laughter into the world. And I had an experience last week, 10 days ago probably, where I brought a lot of sparkle into the world. It was a laundry blunder. Anybody else had a laundry blunder? Did you ever find that one pink towel with your whites and then everything is pink? Or, you know, And I'm not even going to blame it on my husband helping me with the laundry. I'm going to take full credit for it. I looked up the word blunder, and it means stupid error. But I like blunder a lot better. So we got a lot of black laundry. If you know my husband, you know that this would be simple to understand. The only thing in his wardrobe is our black Harley Davidson shirts. I often have thought that they could give you the motorcycle for free because the rest of your life you're going to be spending $40 a pop on those cute shirts. And not only that, but everybody in your life gifts them to you. So Harley makes out pretty good on t-shirts, and I always have ample blacks to watch and to wash. And about 10 days ago, I was throwing a load of blacks in the washer, and I remembered I had a couple of blouses of mine that I could sneak into that batch, too. So I went and I got my laundry, and I threw in my couple of little light things, and I washed them, and better than that, I dried them. And one of the tops was a little like a tank top I wear under a jacket, and it's covered in sparkles. It's really cool. It's these sparkles that are, they're supposed to look like sequins, I think, right? But they're probably glued on. It's a do not wash this shirt. Hand wash in cold water. Do not wring. Do not block. You know, and I just washed the whole thing. Well, I didn't notice till I was pulling Hugh's shirts out of the dryer, and I go to take one big shake of the first shirt, and the sparkles go everywhere. And I went, oh, no. So I shook out every shirt. I swept the garage floor because I made a huge mess. I threw the shirts, I found the culprit. I did not, the culprit has no sparkles on it anymore. I can just throw it away now. It looks like polka dots, weird ones. And I threw his shirts back in, all our laundry, back in the dryer, and I had to clean out the dryer. They were all over the dryer. They were in the lint trap. They were everywhere. And I shook them out. I put them back in the dryer. I brushed them. I did everything I could, but unfortunately, or fortunately, he's going to sparkle for a while. So I do my part. Come nighttime, the second or third day we were wearing sparkles together, we got ready to go to bed, and Hugh pulled off his shirt. He had sparkles all over his body. As it turns out, the sparkles went on the inside of the clothes as well as the outside of the clothes. So now we have sparkly bodies every night when we go to sleep. So there are sparkles in our bed. There are sparkles in the kitchen. There are sparkles in my car. And oh my gosh, there's a sparkle right now. And when I was thinking about how easy it would be to fall into judgment, like, are you kidding me? You washed that, you know, you ruined a good, you know, I could do all of that personal judgment. But you know what? Instead, we've had fun with it. And as I was having fun with it, I thought of Hugh being on the pulpit, and I thought he would make this a Jesus story. So I had to beat him. So I'm going to tell you, I had this vision of inviting his Jesus over for dinner. And it's really funny, honey, that you talked about the laughing Jesus laughing. Have you ever seen that picture of the laughing Jesus? Oh, it's so fabulous. It's this picture of this man and his head is thrown back just the way Hugh described it. It was tickling me while I was sitting there listening. And it's this gorgeous laughing Jesus. And I had this vision of that Jesus sitting at our dining room table and me and Hugh telling him this story about all the funny little sparkles. And then I had this vision that Jesus and I would break into song and we would look at Hugh sparkling and we would go, you light up my life. You give me hope to carry on. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. It is so easy to fall into judgment. We don't even realize that we're doing it. Mary Cox Garner, in her book called The Hidden Souls of Words, she reminds us that the word judgment originally was not a bad word. It had to do with being discerning. It had to do with having an ability to reason. And it was only in recent times, in the way language works, that we gave it an accusatory meaning. Do you know the word judgmental? Listen to this definition of judgmental. Excessive critical point of view, condemning and disapproving. That's harsh. And then if you look at that, if you attach a religious connotation to it, then it says a misfortune or calamity viewed as divine punishment. It's Old Testament, right? It's everything we just talked about. It's the view of the prophets. It served a purpose. It does not need to be our purpose anymore. There is a new light entering into the world. There is something new and sparkly and wonderful trying to emerge, and we need to be attentive so that it can come through us. Mary Cox Garner also said, our judgmental thoughts, listen to this, our judgmental thoughts are so pervasive that we even trick ourselves into thinking they are beneficial. But what they do is block our love and dim the light of others. Let nothing get in the way. Let nothing hinder the coming of the light. We have nothing to be afraid of. We only have this gorgeous choice whether we will stand in that place where we will recognize our connection to God. We will let our light shine, that we will sparkle like all get out, because a new light is coming. The invisible becomes visible by our faith in it. And I believe we are up for the task. So let's just take a moment to anchor these ideas in prayer. And I would invite you now to just review the things you heard this morning that have touched you in some way, that you're a little more open.